नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। Reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 6, Chapter 9, and the verse is 33. However, that is a prose verse, and we generally don't chant the prose verse, but I'll start out by reciting the translation. I can see it. So these are the demigods praying to Lord Krishna for lots of help because they are in big time trouble. There's this big, huge, humongous, overpowering demon called Vritrasura, whose head touches the clouds. And there's a big fight which had gone on, and Vritrasura was literally swallowing the weapons that were being thrown at him, clubs, arrows, spears. He's just swallowing them like they were nothing. And the demigods knew at this time, at this point, that they didn't have a chance. So what do they do when they don't have a chance, when it looks like it's a foregone conclusion that they are going to die? They run to the Lord, which they should have done in the first place, and they wouldn't have been in this trouble at all. So that's their problem. It's when everything is going fine, we don't need God. But when things get rough and tough and hot and miserable, we run to the Lord. And because they do take shelter of the Lord does take care of them. So here we have the demigods pacifying, or you might say sweetening, the Lord with beautiful prayers. And it shows you by their prayers they do know better. They do know what they're supposed to do. But like so many of us, they often don't do what they're supposed to do. So I'll read the translation now. I simply wanted to introduce that for those who hadn't been coming for the last few days or haven't heard it on the internet, that this is an interlude in a battle, and the demigods are now glorifying the Supreme Lord. O Supreme Personality of Godhead, O Narayan, O Vasudev, original person, O most exalted person, supreme experience, welfare personified, O supreme benediction, supremely merciful and changeless, O support of the cosmic manifestation, sole proprietor of all planetary systems, master of everything, and husband of the goddess of fortune, your lordship is realized by the topmost sannyasis or renunciants who wander about the world to preach Krishna consciousness, fully absorbed in samadhi. All the senses are focused on the Supreme Lord. Fully absorbed in samadhi through bhakti yoga. Because their minds are concentrated upon you, they can receive the conception of your personality in their fully purified hearts. When the darkness in their hearts is completely eradicated, and you are revealed to them, the transcendental bliss they enjoy is the transcendental form of your lordship. In other words, just looking at the beauty of Krishna is so compelling, is so overwhelming, it's so enlivening, it's so spectacular that they just tremble, they shiver, they're teeth chatter out of transcendental bliss, out of looking. It's like if you see somebody so beautiful that you cannot take your eyes off that person, and you don't want to, and each moment that you keep your eyes on that person, it's like a stream of sweet nectar flowing through the eyes to the mind, into the heart, and causing all sorts of spontaneous symptoms of ecstasy. And that's what this is, the demigods are talking about here. When the darkness in their hearts is completely eradicated, and you are revealed to them, the transcendental bliss they enjoy is the transcendental form of your lordship. No one but such persons can realize you. Therefore, we simply offer you our respectful obeisances. Purport by His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada. The Supreme Personality of Godhead has numerous transcendental names pertaining to different grades of revelation to various grades of devotees and transcendentalists. When He is realized in His impersonal form, He is called the Supreme Brahman. As we know, the impersonal form is really not a form. It's an infinite expanse of brilliance or light. It's not something you love. It's something you simply experience. When He is realized in His impersonal form, He is called the Supreme Brahman. When realized as the Paramatma, He is called Antaryami. And when He expands Himself in different forms for material creation, He is called Chiro Dakshayi Vishnu, Garbo Dakshayi Vishnu, and Karano Dakshayi Vishnu. These are three expansions of Krishna. When He is realized as Vasudev, Sankarshan, Pradyumna, and Aniruddha, the Chaturvyuha, which means the four, who are beyond the three forms of Vishnu, the three that I just mentioned before, the three Vishnus, He is the Vaikuntha Narayan. Above realization of Narayan is realization of Baladev, and above that is realization of Krishna. So what Srila Prabhupada is saying is that the highest realization that we can gain, that we can experience, is to have the personal association of Krishna. I just mentioned that not only is He so beautiful, but He is all-powerful, He is so intelligent, He is extremely loving. When He smiles, one becomes completely enamored and captivated. And when He glances at you, you feel like you're being bathed in infinite flow of nectar. So this is why when He was in Vrindavan, the gopis of Vrindavan, the milkmaids, as they're called, and the cowherd boys, and the mothers and fathers of these cowherd boys, and especially Mother Yashoda and Nanda Maharaj, the foster parents of Krishna, when they looked at Him, they were literally stunned. It was hard for them to even tell Him what to do because they felt so much joy, so much happiness. On the other hand, they had a duty to perform. So sometimes Nanda Maharaj had to chastise Krishna like an ordinary father would. Don't you do this. This is not right. Don't steal butter from your neighbors. That's very, very bad. Things like that. Here is the Supreme Lord of the universe holding up everything, playing the part of a little boy, and His father playing the part, of course, of a father, telling this huge, this incredible, this amazing person, don't you steal butter. Here is the core or the source of all morality, all righteousness, all goodness, and He's correcting them, telling them, don't be a thief. It's very ironic. So, and it's very likable, very enjoyable when one understands it in that perspective. So all these realizations are possible when one engages fully in devotional service. The covered core of one's heart is then completely open to receiving an understanding of the Supreme Personality of Godhead in His various forms. So that's what really this pastime is about. It really tells us by the example of what has happened to the demigods, how we should not act. If we go forward to text number 40, Srila Prabhupada gives a purport which is so wonderful and so hard-hitting and so resounding that you can never forget it. Basically, he's saying that these demigods are all a bunch, really, they do a nice job, they do their work, and they're very respectable for what they do, but because they want to enjoy sense pleasure in the material world, they are absolute fools. There are Sakama devotees and Akama devotees. A Sakama devotee is a mixed devotee. He does have respect. He does have honor. He does petition the Lord. He does believe in the Lord. And he tries to follow the instructions of the Lord, but always not so successfully. Nonetheless, he knows that God is his master. Nonetheless, he sometimes forgets that God is his master. And that is because he is in a very elevated, very glorious position. For example, Indra, or Vayu, the rain god or chief of the gods, Vayu, the wind god, Chandra, the moon god, Surya, the sun god, they are in a very elevated position. And because they are in an elevated position, they are always receiving adoration and distinction and glorification and appreciation, applause, all of these they are receiving. And it's very difficult, even if you know this philosophy, to discard those particular expressions that I just mentioned. And that is because originally we were all Krishna-conscious living entities, and we decided at some point to come from the eternal world down to this world for no other purpose than to imitate the Supreme Lord, Krishna, because He is the supreme enjoyer. So if he's getting all that enjoyment, all that pleasure, what would it be like if I got lots and lots of pleasure? Because in the eternal world, I'm giving, 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 giving. That's the nature of the devotee, to give. He's a servant. That's our constitutional position. Jivera Swarupa Hoy Krishnera Nitya Das. The constitutional position of the living entity is to be an eternal servant of Krishna. We are very tiny. Krishna is very large. Krishna is the supplier of all of our needs. Therefore, it is only natural that we give our respect, we give our honor, we give devotion, we give our love to Krishna because he deserves it. He's worthy of it. However, if we forget that and all we are seeing is the pleasure he's getting from the adoration that he receives, or certain foodstuffs that he may receive, certain glorification he receives, it can become a curiosity, if not an obsession, to wonder what this tastes like. What does it taste like to be glorified? I'm always giving glory, but what would it be like if I was on the other side getting glory? So that's very curious. Lord Chaitanya himself had a different kind of curiosity. He wanted to know, he's Krishna, and he wanted to know what it feels like to be the lover rather than the beloved. The lover being Srimati Radharani. Her love is perfect. And he was thinking, what does it feel like to be her? What kind of bliss is she experiencing? What does her love for me feel like? What is the sweetness that she experiences when she loves me? What does that sweetness taste like? So in order for him to really know this from an experiential point of view, he had to come down into this material world for two purposes, of course. One, to launch the Sankirtan movement, which is the means by which we can all become enlightened. We can all develop pure love of God. But also to taste. This is the more internal or subtle reason for Lord Chaitanya's appearance here. And that was to taste those feelings. So he took on the persona of Srimati Radharani. And in so doing, what happened was that he was in love with his own self, Krishna. But he was not in the mood of Krishna when he was loving his own self. He was in the mood of the devotee loving. And he was experiencing the bliss. And we see this in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, how the Lord finally gets a chance to know what he tastes like, what his bliss feels like, and what loving him feels like, which is what Srimati Radharani experienced in her in her love for Krishna. So this is the real goal, the real truth, the real focus of life. We came down, as I said, into this material world, but we came down to enjoy through the five senses. But what happens when we enjoy through the five senses? What happens is that we become attached to the objects of the senses. And when we become attached to the objects of the senses, if for some reason we want them but can't get them, we're frustrated. And when we're frustrated, we become angry. When we become angry, we can take out the anger outward, or we can take it out on ourselves, on our own self. If we take it out on ourselves, we may become very depressed, we may hate ourselves, we may lose all sense of self-esteem. Or we take it out on somebody else. Then, when we act angrily, we may get anger back from another person. Or we may get hatred back from another person. Or we may end up in a fight. And that's really what fights are all about. I have some certain qualities. You're not recognizing them, or you're disregarding them, or you're spurning them, or you're condemning them, and you're making me feel tiny, little, insignificant. And I'm not little, tiny. I'm big, I'm strong, I'm powerful. How dare you put me down? This is pride. So when we have this false pride, what happens is that we want to retain that illusion, retain that image of our so-called greatness, bigness, grandness, which really is all nothing more than illusion. What happens at the time of death to all that? If you're a president and you die, what happens to your presidency? If you are a chairman of a board of a big, huge corporation, General Motors or or Kmart or any of these, what happens to your position at the time of death? You leave it all. It reminds me of a painter who spends years painting a beautiful picture, and he makes it better and better and better, and he looks at it and he relishes it, he enjoys it, and he's so much happy over it. And then when he finally finishes it, he just tears it up and then starts all over again. That's what life is all about. We make so many creations, and at the end, they're all taken away from us. We don't have them anymore. They're gone. And you come back, you get another life and another chance to make another painting, which at the end, you're going to tear up, spit on, ignore, disregard, and then another painting. It's on and on and on ad infinitum. And that's what living entities are doing. They're going around and around and around. It reminds me a little like we've all been to the carnivals. And you go on one of these Ferris wheels, you know, and the Ferris wheel, it takes you up, and then it's stuck. Somebody is working the lever down below, and then you're going up, and then you stop. And then you stop, and when you stop, you look out at the scenery, and you see a particular scenery. You see some cars here, you see some buildings there, you see some kids here, and that's your life. That's one lifetime. Then you go up again, the Lord pushes the lever, and you move up a little bit higher, and you see a different scene. And then you see maybe animals, maybe you're an ant, or maybe you're a cockroach, or whatever you are, and you see a different scene, and you get the experiences through your senses of that scene. And then you come down again, another scene you're looking at. And so that's what life, analogy came to me from that very wonderful verse. I believe it's in the 18th chapter, if I can remember it. The Lord is seated in everyone's heart. How does that? The Supreme Lord is seated in everyone's heart. Anybody help me out on that? The Supreme Lord is seated in everyone's heart and is directing the wanderings of all living entities who are seated as on a machine made of the material energy. So that's it. The machine is the Ferris wheel. And the Lord is just moving us from one scene, to another, and then again and again and again. And during the period, while we're looking and we're watching, it's not just watching and looking. Also, there are things falling from the sky. There is all kinds of hail falling from the sky, bopping up on the head. And sometimes there's rain, and sometimes there's snow, and sometimes there's sleet. And where it's not a peaceful journey going around that Ferris wheel. It's got a lot of different bumps and injuries. So enjoyment in the material world is never just a straight line. It's full of, as I said, transitory or momentary, now I have it, pleasure. And then that pleasure, it disappears. And then followed by illness or despair or depression or any of these things. Pleasure follows pain. Pain follows pleasure. But what does the soul, what do we all really want? Do we want this kind of thing? As Lord, the Krishna says, he says that those who are wise do not want this type of temporary pleasure, that they want eternal pleasure. They want to enjoy constantly. Well, you cannot enjoy anything in this material world constantly. Because let's take a very good example. Let's take ice cream. We all have eaten ice cream. We all enjoy it, love it, at least most of us do. And you take it, the first lick is very tasty. And then the next lick is also tasty. You get down to the 20th lick, it's not so tasty. You go to the 40th lick, it hardly has any taste. And you go to the 60th lick, you don't even care for it anymore. Why is that? And that's because the tongue has little cells on it, and cells, like any cell, can become fatigued. And when they become fatigued, they fail to deliver the impulse that they originally did when they were not fatigued. It's like if you run, if you're fatigued, you can't run very fast or very far. But if you're not fatigued, then you may be able to run the mile or five or six or whatever you can do. So what happens is the tongue, and that's Krishna's grace also, that the tongue becomes fatigued so that we don't gorge ourselves. But many people, what they do is they wait a half hour, and they may throw up the ice cream that they had before. Some people have bulimia. They do this type of a thing. Yeah, they throw up, and then what they do is that they go for another quart of ice cream because it tastes so good at the beginning. And you're just hoping it'll continue to taste good, and then it's less and less and less and less. Then, okay, let me try something else. Maybe I'll go out and get some pizza. That should do it. And 5, 10, 20, 30 bites, it's all over. Now we need something else. Okay, let me look some with my eyes, my ears. So sense pleasure is limited. It's short. You have it, and then it's gone. But the soul knows intuitively it's supposed to enjoy continuously. Well, how do we get continuous joy? How is it possible? When we know, not only, I only gave one part of it. If you overeat ice cream like I was mentioning before, it also has some physiological repercussions. For example, the next day you may wake up with your nose so full of mucus that you can hardly even recognize your own voice. It's not the way you normally speak. And you may feel very heavy, very listless, very drowsy, because all of this is impure. It's more than what the body should be taking. And we have allowed the tongue to take control over us in a terrible next day. And then we say, oh, I never should have done that. I know I shouldn't have done that. That was terrible. Next time, I resolve never to do it again. Well, if we become Krishna conscious, we can actually control this. Because as Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, that if you are filled with desire for sense pleasure, if you restrict your sense pleasure, The result of that will be is that you can hold a spring down so long, but when your muscles give way, what happens is that you can't keep your hand on the spring. You let go and the spring bounces up and hits the ceiling. Similarly, the same thing happens when you restrict your senses and keep restricting. What may often happen is that, for example, you vowed never to eat pizza anymore, or ice cream, or sweet rice, or whatever it is. You're not going to do this because you got sick last time. So the days go by, the weeks go by, the months go by, and you're doing quite well, and then suddenly you get a craving. And the craving is so overwhelming, so conquering, and you resist, but you can't resist any longer, and you give in. And how much do you eat? You make up for all the lost time from before. So you didn't have 3 quarts over the past month, but you just did last night. So this is what happens. Very unbalanced and not really the way to go. What Krishna is saying is try through the process of devotional service. And this is what the demigods should be doing. They should be trying to develop real devotional service, not for the idea of being important, being powerful, being great, being glorious. Not for that, so that they could be adored, they can be bowed down to, they can be applauded, they can be patted on the back. Not for that reason. Do your service, whether it's lighting the sun, or whether it's casting the moon's glow, or whether it's blowing the wind, or whether it's keeping the oceans going. Do it as a love offering to Krishna. And if Krishna wants to take you out of your position of being the king of the waters, or the king of the sun, or the king of the air, that's his call. And we should be ready and willing to accept whatever Krishna wills. And sometimes we are snatched out of a particular situation, and we find we try to get back into it, but we can't, because Krishna has a different plan for us. And we have to submit, surrender to that plan. Krishna says, as they surrender unto me, I reward them accordingly. So the reward that we get is the closeness of Krishna. The reward that we get is more devotional service to Krishna, which in turn, when done with love and affection, dedication, brings Krishna closer to us. Krishna says, engage your mind always in thinking of me. Become my devotee. Offer obeisances. Worship me. Thus completely absorbed in me, surely you will come to me. He says, surely, not maybe or possibly. He says, surely you will come. He's making a promise. Therefore, if Krishna makes a promise to us, then all we have to do is follow that. Engage your mind. Now, the process is this. As we engage our mind in serving Krishna with love in our hearts, Krishna is feeling that love that we are expressing while we are performing devotional service. You may be cooking. You may be dressing the deities. And you're asking Krishna, please guide me, help me, so I can make this taste so good, so that when you taste it, you will feel great pleasure. Or let me dress you in such a way so that when the mirror is placed in front of you, you will be pleased with the image of yourself. So when the devotee is thinking in that very personal way, then the result will be is that Krishna will be pleased. And when Krishna is pleased, he reciprocates with his devotee. When Krishna reciprocates, you will feel, I will feel, we will all feel within the heart, because Krishna dwells in the heart area right beside the soul. And he infuses the soul with his love. And when he infuses the soul with his love, the soul feels that love like a lotus when it receives the sunshine in the heat of the day, the noon. So what happens to the lotus? It opens up and blooms beautifully. The heart, when it feels Krishna's infusion of pure love, it opens and it feels that enjoyment, the kind of enjoyment which passes all reasoning, which is so far beyond any kind of pleasure we may have experienced with our arm, with our skin, with our eyes, with our nose, with our tongue, with our ears, because it's innermost. It's not something external, and it stays with us. Now, the intensity may be reduced. That's possible. But the flow, like an underground flow of water, it's always there. And when we make contact with Krishna, then what happens? We have true inner peace. Krishna says, one who is not connected with me in Krishna consciousness can have neither transcendental intelligence nor a steady mind, without which there is no possibility of peace. And how can there be any, how can there be any happiness without peace? So this is what Krishna is offering us. This is what he's giving us. He's giving us inner peace. And when we have inner peace, that's what every soul is really hoping for, craving for, but looking in the wrong place for it. You can't get it outside. You want peace? Okay, you sleep on a rubber raft and you look up at the sky. Hey, I'm peaceful. And you get off the rubber raft and all your anxieties and trepidations and uncertainties and doubts flow back into the head. Or you go and you take a nice class in yoga, which is good. But the peace that you get, which is when all of the chakras are all working well and all the energies are flowing in a nice way, then what happens? But then you get back into the different activities which cause anxiety and uncertainty and doubt and anger. And then where's our peace? Inner peace comes from Krishna. And that's where we need to focus our attention. My Lord, not give me peace, but give me loving service. And peace will be the automatic outcome of loving service. Bliss will be the automatic outcome of loving service. Inner strength, confidence, courage will be the automatic outcome of loving service. Why? Because that's what Krishna is. And he's simply imparting himself to us. And when he imparts himself to us, we carry a little particle of himself into our daily activities, whether they are scholastic, whether they are business, whether they are family, whether they are personal, whatever they are, we're carrying that joy, that peace, that strength, that love of Krishna into our activities. And by so doing, all those whom we come in contact with and impact feel your peace. And they consider that there's something different about you than anyone else. Many devotees have told me that. Many book distributors, you know, they've come from a morning program. They're full of joy. They're literally zinging along. And people, look, you don't look like ordinary person with all the anxieties and uncertainties and doubts that everybody else has. What is it? It's right in this book. You chant Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. You chant the holy name with all your heart and soul. We associate with the Krishna is in his name, so we associate with Krishna by chanting his name. And when it is chanted with affection, chanted with love, chanted with full submission, knowing that this is a grace, knowing that this is a gift, like Nakatma was saying yesterday, it's a gift, and it's such a gift that you can never pay for it. If you had all the money in all the universes and you tried to pay for that gift of the holy name, you would fall so far short, your debt would be infinitely high. That's how powerful, that's how great, that's how glorious, that's how wonderful this holy name is. And that's why when we have our men and women, they go out on the streets and they're chanting the Hare Krishna mantra, they're bestowing this mercy upon all of the people who are out there. And they may not understand it. They may not know it. They may not get it. They don't have to. They're sick. They're diseased with the disease of ignorance. And ignorance can be done away with. It can be dispelled by a medicine. And Lord Chaitanya said that he has brought the medicine. Wake up, sleeping souls. Wake up, sleeping souls. How long would you sleep in the lap of the witch called Maya? I've descended just to save you. Other than myself, you have no friend in this world. I've brought the medicine that will wipe out the disease of illusion from which you are suffering. Here, take this Hare Krishna mantra. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. So, to conclude, the demigods have gone to the Lord to ask for help. So they can defeat this Vritrasura. But the Lord has already made a very interesting arrangement that when Tvashta, who is the father of Vishvarup, whom Indra killed mercilessly, cut off his three heads just because he was offering some of the sacrifice to his relatives on his mother's side. So what happened was that his father, Vashta, he decided that he would do a ceremony in which he would, as a result, he would kill Indra. So he did the mantra. And he did this mantra, which in effect says, I'll read it if I can read it. Well, I remember. Which in effect says, O enemy of Indra, please kill Indra. That's what he wanted to say. But because he pronounced one of the words which had a vowel in it, he pronounced it long instead of short. By long, I mean ah instead of or e instead of it. So he pronounced it long, and it changed the meaning of the word, and it changed the meaning of the sentence. So it came out, O enemy of Indra, kill Indra. So instead of Indra killing his enemy, so anyway, it said, O enemy of Indra, kill Indra. So who are the enemies of Indra? The demigods. So in effect, instead of him saying that the creation of this Vritrasura should kill Indra, he said that all the demigods who are the enemies, all the demigods who are the enemy of Vritrasura should kill Vritrasura. That's what it came out to be. So how does that happen? I mean, this is a practiced person who knows mantras, who chants them perfectly. Krishna is there. Man proposes, God disposes. We may make so many plans, but those plans may go awry. So therefore, our safest course is to depend upon Krishna, to always try to remember Krishna by whatever means we can, to think and to chant Krishna's name as we walk along the streets, as we engage in our service to hear Krishna or chant Krishna. We should literally fall in love with Krishna to such an extent that we never want to leave him. So I leave you all with that thought. We've gone way over time, and I'm so sorry about that. Nonetheless, thank you all for your kind attention. All glories to Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.